Hello and welcome to Off Curve. I'm Wicked Good and I am talking to you about Hearthstone on my drive home from work. It is Monday, July 23rd, 2018. I'll just start off with apologies for missing a show last week, and I'm going to try to make it up with two shows this week, hopefully. We drove my oldest daughter up to summer camp. She's going there for a month. It's like the first time that she's been there. She's gone away for more like a couple days. And so I ended up taking Thursday and Friday off, and did not plan super well around the rest of the week getting an episode out. And I was actually going to record on Tuesday. Like, it's like, you know, something happens, right? Like, I am an adult with a full-time job on top of, you know, doing all the Hearthstone content. So things happen. And there was basically, like, a torrential rainstorm, like torrential thunderstorm. Tuesday when I wanted to record, and then Wednesday kind of got away from me. I ended up getting on a late train. I was just exhausted when I got home from work. So, you know, and then Thursday and Friday I was off. So I theoretically, like, it was a 4-hour drive to and from Maine from Massachusetts. So I guess I could have recorded there, but it's very likely that either my wife or my daughter would have pushed me out of the car by the time that I was done recording. So I figured let's be on the safe side. So you're getting this today. So, you know, again, sorry about that, but you know, I life is what it is, right? So. But I am here for you, and ladder is pretty much unchanged. I'm still trying to make that even lock deck in Wild work, just because that's really all that I feel like playing right now. I'm not really feeling jamming standard ladder since I'm at Legend, because, like, Legend ladder really doesn't do anything for me right now, like, especially because the meta's changing. Like, I could try to learn a new deck in standard if I felt like that was going to be useful for me next month, but I mean, the decks are pretty much what they are. I can probably just jam even Warlock again next month if I want to. And, you know, it's just like my rank doesn't really move all that much, and I don't really have anything to shoot for because I'm not going for HCT points. So, like, it's hard to, you know, try hard that much, you know what I mean? So I'm trying to make that happen in Wild. I'm having fun. I'm playing it a little bit here and there. When I get frustrated, I turn it off, and because this is more for fun. I mean, not that the game is always for fun, right? But I'm not really, like, if I can get to a double Legend, it's great. If not, I'm okay with that. So I did tweak the list. I took some inspiration from a list that Heilong took to Legend in Wild that had some interesting things going on that I liked, while keeping some of the cards that I liked from my build, and it's been doing better. I tanked my rank down to the floor over the last week, and then I was kind of struggling to get out, and then I just started playing again, and it finally started working. So I'm back up at, like, mid-rank 3 again. So we'll see how that goes. If I get there, great. If not, I'm not really going to sweat it. I also have discovered Hollow Knight, no thanks to to Ridiculous Hat and Andrew's Living, so I've been playing that more. But I think that's good, right? Like, it's good to take a break as much as I can, take a break, you know, from this, so, you know, before the new expansion drops, because I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be tryharding on the, you know, when the new expansion drops anyway. So it's good to kind of take a break, reset, and, you know, play something else for a little bit too, and just to kind of, you know, keep some variety and whatnot. You can't really go all in, and, you know, eventually you do burn out, and I want to make sure I don't burn out, both for myself and for you all, because, you know, I like doing this, and I love the community, and I don't want to burn out on the game. So that's where I am. And, you know, I'm fine with that. If I get to Legend in Wild, great. If not, I've already done it in Standard. So, you know, I've accomplished my goals for the month. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, catching the car and then trying to figure out what to do with it. All right, so what we're doing this week is, you know, today we got the first reveal stream. We're starting to get the new cards getting revealed coming in. I'm not talking about any of those. As a reminder, I am the resident guest host for the Happy Hearthstones card review episodes, and so we will be reviewing all of those in detail, so you can go there to hear all of my thoughts on the cards. What I am going to do in lieu of that is what I like to call my rearview mirror series, where I take the reviews that we did for the current set and then look at them, you know, knowing what we know now, and try to figure out, like, for the ones that I got right, what did I get right that most people didn't? And for the ones that I got wrong, why did I think what I did, and how can we learn from that in the future? Now the truth of the matter is that everybody sucks at card reviews. Everybody's wrong a lot, but we just don't notice it because most people don't go back and, like, other than, like, you know, Trump, the player, not the president, you know, a lot lot of people don't really go back and review their old reviews. So, and I'm not going to do it exhaustively, but I do want to, you know, go through a few that kind of stood out to me as being, you know, demonstrative, is that a word? I don't know. Of, like, things that we can learn from that process just to try to get better at it. Because, like, I am not expecting that I'm going to be right 100% of the time, but I do want to get better at being able to evaluate cards, both in terms of just being able to put out, you know, an informative show, even though it's for entertainment purposes only, really. But also for, you know, I'm a deck builder at heart, and I like being able to find some of these things before other people do, and that's the way you get an edge in the meta. So I want to try to be able to get better at evaluating those cards, and, you know, both for myself and for the show. So if you are, you know, kind of overwhelmed by the new cards that are coming out and you're not really sure what to do, this is kind of, you can go back to the old episodes too, of the old rear view mirror episodes, and listen to those for past sets. But this is kind of my way of looking at the ones that I missed on, mostly, or that everybody else missed on that I didn't, and try to figure out, like, where we could have done a little bit better. So that's what we're going to do. So let's get into those. All right, so let's start with the card that I was as close to all in on as you could get in the reviews, and that was Lady in White. So obviously, if you know me, I'm a Priest main. I love Priest. It's my favorite class pretty much ever. And I really, really wanted Lady in White to be good. And you could see, like, my thought process for Lady in White is that it's really not asking too much of you. It's asking you to put minions with high health in your deck. And that's generally what Priest is going to do anyway. You're going to play cards like Northshire Cleric, like Acolyte of Pain, like, you know, there's a lot of 2/6s and 3/6s and 4/9s in the case of Nightscale Matriarch, and you know, you can play dragons that are 4/8s and 4/12s, and like, I just also just come off of, you know, getting Void Ripper Priest to work, right? Which, again, was a different meta, it was pre-rotation. But it's not unreasonable to look at the number of defensively statted minions that Priest has and think, this could do something. Like, if you think about Shudderwalk Shaman, you're playing Hemet a lot of the time at the same way, right? Like, it's a 6-mana 6/6. And I don't have the card in front of me, but I believe that's the same as for Lady in White. And sometimes you just do that. Yes, you need to not die in the process, but it does kind of the same thing. Like, it improves your deck dramatically. In the case of Hammett, it's getting rid of the card you want to draw. In the case of Lady in White, it's improving all of the minions that were there to be defensive and make them offensive. It didn't work, and I don't know that it's necessarily a flaw with the card, and this is really what's difficult about evaluating cards retrospectively, is that the question with Lady in White in particular is it not seeing play because the effect is not good, or is it not seeing play because it doesn't have a deck to fit in yet? And that's really important to figure out with these kinds of cards, because if you look at something like Hadronox, right? Like, Hadronox was a joke for 2 sets, and then all of a sudden they print Witching Hour and the rotation comes, and all of a sudden Hadronox becomes a must craft. And is it because Hadronox suddenly got better? Not really. Is it because Hadronox got a little bit more support and it got a deck to fit in? Absolutely. So, maybe this is me being a little bit stubborn, but I feel like there's a place for Lady in White, but it's just not in the Witchwood meta. Like, some people were trying it in Combo Priest and Inner Fire Combo Priest. I don't feel like it was great there, but I feel like Priest's problem right now in general is that its only win condition is, like, you know, mind blessed, holy fire. And that's not great, or inner fire, you know, divine spirit, inner fire. And neither of those are really great for the meta right now. So I wonder if it's just, like, the state of priest in general after the Witchwood that was keeping it down, and maybe there will be some things that are in the new set that will help it along, or maybe some of the decks that will change. But, like, when you're dealing with Druid that can armor up for, like, 50, and you're dealing with Shudderwalk Shaman, which runs double healing rain, it's hard to see priest ending a game ever. So, and Lady in White theoretically should help with that, but I think it's just, that particular strategy is too slow in this meta, but it could see play because it still doesn't ask very much of you. Like, what it asks of you is to put defensively statted minions in your deck, which are basically priest cards. So I'm holding out hope for Lady in White, but I think that this is a case of a card that maybe would be good enough in certain metas, but just this isn't its time. So if we're going to talk about the priest legendaries, we also need to talk about Camellios. And Camellios is one of the cards that I want to talk about that I think I was right about. And I was not enthused about this card. And everybody else was. Because, you know, people were talking about it being like a sniping tool and giving you information. It was going to see play in high-level tournament play. Because it tells you what, you know, multiple cards over the course of several turns are in your opponent's hand. And that gives you information. You can use that information to, you know, get a read on what is in your opponent's hand and then react accordingly. And Camellios was tried very early on in a Spiteful Priest. And it fell out of the list very quickly. And then Spiteful Priest in general fell off. But we've had several controlling style priest decks. We've had Mind Blast Priest, which is sort of a combo control deck. And then we have Quest Priest, which is literally the slowest deck we've seen in a really long time since, like, Tank Up Control Warrior. And it never made it into either of those decks. And the reason is, as I said at the time, and I stand by this, because if it was going to go into a deck, if the prevailing theory was correct, then Camellios would have a spot in either of those decks because those decks would want information. Information helps you plan your turns and plan your answers. The thing is that when you have a 30-card deck, and this has been the case with every single one of these types of cards, this one was just a little bit different because it was giving you information as well as access to cards that wouldn't be in your deck normally. But typically, when you are building a deck for Constructed, you are looking for cards that advance your game plan consistently. Now, that doesn't mean you don't necessarily run Discover effects. Stonehill Defender is a perfect example, but the thing is that Stonehill Defender is also a taunt. And Stonehill Defender, you are playing knowing roughly what you expect to get out of it. You play it in Paladin because you expect to get Sunkeeper Tarim. You play it in, you don't really play it in that many other, I guess you play it in Mage, but it's mostly because it's a taunt that gets you another taunt. And it affects the board immediately. Like, the thing with Camellios is that it gives you information, but the best players, they can figure that out anyway. Like, they can put their opponents on a card through hand reading. They don't really need Camellios, and they're going to put cards in their deck that advance their own game plan rather than using their opponent's cards. Because even if it's, you know, yes, eventually you will get something useful, but the thing is that you need to use that card that turn or else you'll lose it, and using the card takes away that advantage, so it actually disincentivizes you from actually playing the card, which means you have a dead card in your hand most of the game. And having a dead card in your hand most of the game is a reason that a lot of the defensively oriented quests didn't work, because you lost a card in your mulligan, and you had a card sitting, or, you know, you had, sometimes you just had cards sitting in your hand that weren't answers to address what your opponent's doing. So, I think that Camellios is a fun card. It's an interesting card. I'm glad they're printing these effects. I don't expect to see it in a lot of high-level lists. And ultimately, high-level players' lists are the ones that are going to drive the meta. So if top legend players aren't playing Camellios because they don't need it, then those lists are not going to trickle down to the hoi polloi like us. And then we're not going to play that in our decks because the pros aren't playing it in their decks. You know, good, bad, or indifferent. So, all that is to say that Camellios is a really cool card, and I hope they do more things that are, you know, out of the box. But it is not the meta breaker that it was widely thought it was going to be. So, I asked Andrew, what cards do you want me to talk about? I said, I'm already talking about Lady in White, but I'm also talking about Camellios, because those were two cards that we disagreed on. I said, what else did I mess up that you want me to talk about? So, one that was on his list was Life Drinker. And at the time when we recorded the card review, I think it was in the, Life Drinker was in the Facebook dump. There's always like one or two gems in the Facebook dump after the last reveal stream. And by the time that we got into the review episode, we'd seen Shudderwalk Shaman, like the initial disguised toast incarnation. And we knew that it was important for that deck. And at the time, my reaction was that it was part of that deck because it did something very specific, which was do damage to your opponent and heal you without targeting, which was important for Shudderwalk because Shudderwalk chooses targets randomly. I was not convinced that it was generally a good card for Constructed, and I was clearly proven wrong because it's seen play in Aggro Mage, it's seen play in Heal Zoo, it's seen play... there might be a couple of other decks that it's seen play in. And I think what I discounted from Life Drinker is, first of all, that it's just a decently statted minion, like a 3-3 for 4 with a good effect is reasonable. And being able to both heal yourself for 3 and do 3 damage over taunts is valuable. Like, any minion that... And it's hard to see that sometimes because, like, we've had Nightblade since the beginning, since vanilla. And Nightblade is a 5 mana, I forget what the stats are, that does 3 damage to your opponent. And full stop. And that really has never been good enough. This is a little bit understated, but it heals you and it hurts your opponent and it bypasses taunt. And by the way, in a heal zoo, you have healing synergy, so you can take advantage of those too. So I think that I didn't really recognize how flexible of an ability that was, and it probably had to do with the fact that, you know, the cards in the Facebook dump are the ones that you have the least amount of time to really evaluate because they come all at once and you don't really get to see them. But I definitely did whiff on Life Drinker, just like undervaluing it as useful outside of Shudderwalk Shaman. But I think that that particular ability and the ability to do direct damage over taunts in any sort of an aggressive deck is really valuable. And that's something that I'm going to keep my eyes open for in the future because, you know, being able to develop a minion and be able to do damage and also not have that negated by something like Counterspell is pretty valuable. And I didn't recognize that at the time, and I will do better to do that from going forward. So another card that both Andrew and I were really excited about was Countess Ashmore. I think a lot of people were excited about that. And you know, the natural comparison at the time was to Curator. They're both 7 mana minions that draw you one each of 3 types of minions in your deck. In the case of the Curator, it was Dragon, Murloc, and Beast. In the case of Ashmore, it was Death Rattle, Life Steal, and Rush. And I think there are two key differences that we collectively really didn't get when we saw Countess Ashmore, because we just saw Curator 2.0, was that Beast and Dragon in particular, less so Murloc, but you always had Cold Light Oracle at the time, have a much wider pool than either Lifesteal or Rush. There's plenty of Death Rattle minions, but you really want to be drawing at least 2, if not all 3, to get appropriate value off of an effect like this. And there really haven't been enough good Rush and or Lifesteal minions. Like, yes, there's Obsidian Statue, but Priest just isn't doing minion things right now. There's like Vicious Scalehive, but do you really care? Like, that's the minion that gets run in like Even Shaman to grant Lifesteal to the Corpse Taker, and that's not really super great. Like, do you care about Chillwind Champion? Not really. You know, there's like some decent Lifesteal, you know, cards. Maybe the Spectral Cutlass is reasonable, but again, you know, Tess Rogue isn't a thing either. So, like, and the same thing goes for Rush. Like, most of the Rush minions are in Warrior. And Rush Warrior is just not a thing. Like, Darius Crowley is kind of falling out even of the lists. So there aren't really that many Rush minions, again, outside of Vicious Skellhide, that are seeing play. So, you know, I mean, most of the time when you see Rush, it's off of, like, Howlmaster Shaw. Or it's off of a minion that you're getting off of a Wildebeest. So, all that said, there really haven't been that many targets for Countess Ashmore. Now, could that change? Sure. I mean, we're seeing a card that discounts Death Rattles. Maybe being able to draw like a lifesteal and a Rush minion, and, you know, with better Rush minions and better lifesteal minions, or more lifesteal minions and more Rush minions, maybe this gets more valuable. It's hard to say right now without seeing all those cards, but I would say that the pool just isn't good enough right now. And also, there's a big difference between a 4/6 with taunt and a 6/6 without taunt. Like, you were pretty safe to drop Curator because you know that you weren't going to die that turn. Again, the same thing that I talk about with Lady in White with Hemet is the same problem with Countess Ashmore. It's a 6/6 without taunt for 7, so you're taking most of your turn to do that, and you need to be able to do that in a position where you cannot die. And that's hard to do. So I think it's those two things. Now, the second part's not going away, but I think if you get to a point, like with Oakheart, which also took a while to become a thing, like, if you can get to a point where you're drawing specific things, you have a deck that relies upon getting specific cards out of your deck and into your hand, then I think that could become really valuable. We just haven't seen that powerful combination yet. But, again, it took Oakheart a set to get value. Like, it was a joke in Kobold, and now it's, like, a top-tier Druid card. So there's still hope for Countess Ashmore, but I think it really does revolve around the pool of available minions to pull. And we didn't really see all of that. I mean, we did because we recorded the review after the full set's been revealed, but we also thought Rush was going to be just like a lot better than it was. Which is not to say it's bad, there just aren't enough good ones yet. And that's probably just from the developers trying to figure out what's okay and what's not to have Rush. I mean, now we have a 10 mana 8/8 that gets cheaper as you kill off Treants, so, you know, things could change. So, the last card that I want to talk about that I got wrong was Cinderstorm. And I looked at this, and I basically saw big Arcane Missiles. I saw the fact that Arcane Missiles is not being played, and I said, okay, well, this is dumb. Right? Like, why do you want to have 3 mana for 5 damage is just going to go all over the place. Why wouldn't you want to just get, like, a targeted burn spell? And, boy, that was really wrong. That was a dumb take. On one hand, you have Paladin, and we didn't know how prevalent, especially even Paladin, was going to be at the time to make it useful to be able to just ping off a bunch of 1/1s. I mean, hell, we didn't expect Avenging Wrath was going to be a card either, and look at what happened with that. But also, I just kind of discounted the fact that we were losing a bunch of burn in what was Tempo Mage or Secret Mage at the time, especially with Firelands Portal leaving. And, you know, if you can clear out the board and then just play that on an empty board, that's 5 damage to face. And if you are an aggressive mage, the secret mages weren't really as aggressive as the aggro mages right now. So, and you don't really have that many burn spells in mage, as much as it seems like it a lot of the time. Because, I mean, you can't really run 2 pyroblasts, and, like, Flame Geyser isn't a thing. So, that all being the case, I think that I kind of discounted how valuable just having more burn spells to replace the burn spells that we were losing would be. Oh, you also lost Medivh's Valet, which is another source of burn. It wasn't a burn spell, but it was still burn out of the deck. So, you know, I think that, you know, having those cards that can be aggressive when there's a deck that fits them is pretty powerful. And that's something that I didn't really give a whole lot of thought to, because I just saw, well, Arcane Missiles doesn't see play, and this is just bigger Arcane Missiles, so why would I play this? Well, you're playing Arcane Missiles now because you don't have some of the other cards that you just lost. So, you know, you don't have Firelands Portal. You don't have, I forget what else they were playing, but you don't have Medivh's Valet, for example. So you need to replace that burn somehow. Arcane Missiles does some of it, and Cinderstorm does the rest. And, you know, against Paladin, where you're killing off a lot of 1/1s, or you know, even Shaman, that's not bad. So, yeah, I totally whiffed on that. And, you know, burn spells that can go face are good a lot of the time. And you have to think long and hard before you discount them. All right, so that's enough self-flagellation for today. But hopefully this was valuable in terms of, like, looking at some of those cards that maybe we all missed on, and you know, me in particular, because I'm the one who had the opinions and recorded them for posterity. And, you know, thinking about how to evaluate similar cards that are coming next. I mean, the cards are never the same, but it's, you know, it's important to do this exercise. So, as always, you can follow, you can find the show notes for this show and every show at offcurve.com. You can find me on the Happy Hearthstone doing the card review in a couple of weeks. I would imagine it's going to be the first week of August, right before the set drops, that we're going to do the first episode. So we're just waiting on to find out when the final reveal stream is going to be before we figure out when we're going to record that, which affects when Andrew's going to release it. But he usually releases episodes on Tuesdays. So you can find that at thehappyhearthstone.com also. You can follow the show's account at OffCurve on Twitter if you just want announcements of when new content is up, either podcast or on the occasions when I write something and put it up there. That will be there too. Also, sometimes I will retweet when I update, like, the decklist browser for HCT and stuff like that, which you can also find at my site through there. And you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at WickedGood for things related to Hearthstone and also not. And you can follow me on Twitch at WickedGoodFM. I've been trying to stay consistent streaming on Sunday nights. I'm maybe getting able to sneak in a couple of extra streams over the next couple weeks during the week. So look forward to that. Just watch my Twitter. I don't really have a set schedule for anything other than Sunday nights. But if I do that, Twitter will be the place to find that out. Or just, you know, follow and turn on follow notifications. And that will help you out as well. And, you know, do leave a review on iTunes. It's super helpful. I just got my digest of the monthly non-US reviews this week. And I got one review from Canada from MK Houdon. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Who gave it a 5-star review and says, "I'm always looking forward to a new episode of the podcast. Steve has great insights and has a good way of explaining the game's multiple quirks. I learn new things each episode. It makes me a better player by questioning the way I play or by making me better understand the current meta. Most importantly, it reminds me that this is a game and games are for fun. Just like this podcast is a fun listen each time. Keep up the good work, Steve." So thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate all the reviews. It you know, it, as my wife would say, it fills my bucket. And, you know, it gives me fuel to keep going on. And, you know, I don't think there's any content creator who will ever tell you that they're unhappy to hear that you appreciate their work. Like, I may not be very good at responding to that. Like, I, you know, I do sometimes get shy or I don't know how to, you know, accept a compliment sometimes. But I definitely do 100% appreciate it. And I would tell you that almost every content creator does too. So you can leave a review in iTunes or in the podcast app on iOS. It doesn't have to be a 5-star, but obviously I would, you know, appreciate that if it was. And, that's it. So I will hopefully be back later in the week. I want to talk about I had a revelation that I really kind of want to talk about some terms that we use when we review cards. So, we'll probably do that unless something major comes up that I feel like I need to talk about. But until then, good luck to you on ladder. If that's your goal, good luck, have fun in the game and, be good to each other. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.